Section 22, conclusion. Such, then, is the history of my going for refuge. These are the various stages by which the meaning and significance of going for refuge became clear to me, as well as those by which, since the founding of the Western Buddhist Order, that meaning and significance has become still more clear, both to me and to others. As I warned you at the very beginning would be the case, in tracing the history of my going for refuge, I have been tracing the history of a process which followed, and perhaps continues to follow, a rather erratic course. Indeed, I confessed that my progression here had resembled that of the butterfly, which flutters zigzag fashion from flower to flower, and symbolizes the psyche or soul, rather than that of the hawk, which hurls itself straight on its prey and symbolizes the logical mind. For this reason, some of you may have found this history of mine confusing and difficult to follow. You may even have found it at times lacking in continuity, the more especially as the scene changes from England to India and from India back to England, and I come into contact with Burmese monks and Tibetan incarnate lamas, involve myself with ex-untouchables, write books and poems, deliver lectures, hold seminars, and of course, found the Western Buddhist Order. Nonetheless, if we cast a backward glance over the developments I have described, if we cast a backward glance over a backward glance, I think we shall be able to perceive a definite thread of continuity running through them all. My going for refuge began with an experience of the truth taught by the Buddha in the Diamond Sutra, and to a lesser degree by the sixth patriarch in the Sutra of Wai Lang, Huineng. As a result of that experience, I realized that I was a Buddhist, and always had been one, and 2 years later signalized the fact by formally taking the three refuges and five precepts from a Burmese monk in London. Being a Buddhist, I wanted to live and work as a Buddhist. This was hardly possible in the army, into which I had by this time been conscripted, and with which I eventually travelled to the East, nor was it possible in any of the various Indian religious organizations and groups with which I became associated after leaving the army. Disillusioned with both them and worldly life, I therefore resolved to follow the personal example of the Buddha and renounce the household life for the life of homelessness. After going forth in this way, I spent 2 years as a freelance Buddhist ascetic, mainly in South India. The experience served to deepen my understanding of the Dharma and strengthened me in my conviction that I was a Buddhist, and that I therefore decided that the time had come for me to regularize my position by taking formal ordination as a Buddhist monk. Returning to northeast India, I was ordained first as a Shramanera or novice, and then, a year and a half later, as a bhikshu or full monk. By this time, I had settled in Kalimpong, in the eastern Himalayas. But whether in Kalimpong or anywhere else, being a monk had both its advantages and its disadvantages. On the one hand, it meant that I was able to feel fully, and as it were, officially, committed to the spiritual life. On the other, it meant that I was in danger of thinking that I was fully committed to the spiritual life just because I was a monk. I was in danger of confusing commitment with lifestyle, as I indeed did do for a while, at least to some extent. Moreover, I soon discovered that in becoming a monk, I had become not a member of a spiritual community, but only a member of a particular socio-religious group, or a subdivision of such a group, so that an important element, that of Kalyanamitrata, or spiritual friendship, was almost entirely lacking from my life. Nonetheless, the feeling of going for refuge was there, underneath the ashes, and blazed up whenever the eight worldly winds happened to blow upon me more strongly than was their wont. Indeed, it blazed more brightly and more continuously with every year that passed. This was due not so much to the 8 worldly winds as to my increasingly close contact with Tibetan Buddhism, especially as represented by certain incarnate lamas and by the Nyingmapa version of going for refuge and prostration practice. As a result of that contact, I came to have a better appreciation of the meaning and significance of going for refuge, that is to say, a better appreciation of the fact that going for refuge was not just a formality, nor even the means to the arising of the bodhicitta, but the central and definitive act of the Buddhist life, of which the bodhicitta was the altruistic dimension. At the same time, as a result of my contact with the newly converted ex-untouchable Buddhists and my taking bodhisattva ordination, I came closer to seeing that monasticism and spiritual life were not identical. Thus, by the time I returned to England in 1964, I had realized that it was going for refuge that made one a Buddhist, that going for refuge was in fact the central act of the Buddhist life from which all other Buddhist acts derived their significance, end of quote, that it meant organizing one's life round the 3 jewels, and that it constituted the fundamental basis of unity among Buddhists. In England, it did not take me long to discover that, although conditions there were favorable to the spread of the Dharma, a new Buddhist movement was badly needed. A movement was needed that would have as its heart and center not a society, but a spiritual community, and which would be free from the infection of Theravadin pseudo-monastic triumphalism. On April the 7th, 1968, I therefore founded the Western Buddhist Order by conferring the Upasaka Upasika ordination, as it was then called, on 9 men and 3 women. Or rather, the Western Buddhist Order came into existence when 9 men and 3 women committed themselves to the path of the Buddha by publicly taking the 3 refuges and 10 precepts from me in the traditional manner. The fact that they took the refuges and precepts from me, or were ordained by me, meant that their understanding of the meaning of going for refuge coincided with mine, at least to some extent. And in the course of the years that followed, I succeeded in sharing their understanding directly and indirectly with more and more people, so that not counting the 3 who have unfortunately died and the 20 or so who have fallen away, there are at present in the world 337 members of the Western Buddhist Order, or Trilokya Bodhimaha Sangha. The language of conferring and taking, and even of sharing, should not be construed too literally. It should certainly not be construed in such a way as to suggest that in sharing my understanding of the meaning of going for refuge with the 12 original members of the order, I was sharing with them a certain fixed quantity of understanding, so to speak, which thereafter remained unchanged. After the founding of the Western Buddhist Order, the meaning and significance of going for refuge became clearer to me than ever, and I started to perceive some of the deeper and more philosophical implications of that central and definitive act of the Buddhist life. In particular, I saw that going for refuge took place within a context far wider than that of the individual's own personal existence, as well as on a number of different levels. I also saw the full extent of the difference between the old cultural and ethnic going for refuge, as represented by the vast majority of Southeast Asian Buddhists, and the new, more conscious and individual going for refuge, as represented by members of the Western Buddhist Order. Eventually, when the order had been in existence for some 15 or 16 years, I saw that the majority of its members had organized their lives round the 3 jewels to such an extent that there was now little or no resemblance between them and the Upasakas or lay Buddhists of the East. Indeed, it had become impossible to regard them as belonging to any of the traditional socio-religious categories. They were neither monks nor laymen, neither male of female novices or male or female lay devotees. They were simply Buddhists or individuals who had gone for refuge with the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and who, as a means of giving expression to their act in their everyday lives, undertook to observe the 10 precepts, that is, undertook to observe the 10 great ethical principles that in fact constituted the Mula Pratimoksha, or fundamental moral code, of monks and laymen alike. For such mere Buddhists, who were mere Buddhists in much the same way that the followers of the Yogacara school were Chittamatrins, or mere consciousnessists, a new name was clearly needed, preferably one drawn from traditional sources. First in India, and then in the West, therefore, it was decided that in future Upasakas should be known as Dharmacharis and Upasikas as Dharmacharinis, Dharma farers or practitioners of the Dharma. That the change of nomenclature should originally have been adopted in India was perhaps not surprising, for, as the writing of Ambedkar and Buddhism more than ever convinced me, our new Buddhist movement was a continuation of Ambedkar's own work for the Dharma, and the great untouchable leader had in fact asserted the fundamental unity of the Buddhist spiritual community no less uncompromisingly than I had insisted on the central importance of going for refuge. This brings me down very nearly to the present day. It brings me down very nearly to the 20th anniversary of the Western Buddhist Order, which we have gathered in relatively large numbers to celebrate. Now that I have traced the history of my going for refuge, however, where does this leave me? Where does it leave you? Where does it leave us? Quite simply, it leaves us, in a sense, exactly where we were 20 years ago, or whenever it was that we first committed ourselves to the path of the Buddha. It leaves us going for refuge. We do not, it is to be hoped, go for refuge in quite the same way as we did then, or even as we did last year, or last month, or even last week. With every day that passes, in fact, our experience of going for refuge should gain in depth and intensity, should take place within a wider context and on a higher level. With every day that passes, we should have a more decisive realization of the fact that we are, each one of us, an arm or a hand of that Avalokiteshvara who is the embodiment of the cosmic will to enlightenment and therefore the embodiment of the cosmic going for refuge. At the beginning of this paper I said that, having traced the history of my going for refuge, it would be appropriate for me to share with you some of my current thinking as regards my own relation to the order and the relation of the order itself to the rest of the Buddhist world. The tracing of that history has, however, taken me much longer than I expected, and I shall, obviously, have to postpone my remarks on those subjects to some future occasion. The nature of my relation to the order has, in any case, transpired to some extent in the latter part of the narrative. As regards the relation of the order to the rest of the Buddhist world, let me simply observe that it is a relation that subsists essentially with individuals, and that on this, the occasion of our 20th anniversary, we are happy to extend the hand of spiritual fellowship to all those Buddhists for whom commitment is primary, lifestyle secondary, and who, like us, go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha, repeating, whether in Pali or any other language, Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. To the Buddha for refuge I go, to the Dharma for refuge I go, to the Sangha for refuge I go, now and so long as life shall last, now until the attainment of enlightenment.